And now, the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
Ah, Johnny Donovan, yes indeed. Another Friday together with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Chilly outside.
What was the temperature in Beijing and Shanghai? Hot, right?
Snowed the first day. Beijing is like,
oh,
the weather's
right,
like here. Yeah.
Right.
Snowed the first day. The grass was covered, not the streets.
Uh-huh.
And second day was windy and clear.
Mm-hmm.
First day, the pollution's terrible.
I was going to ask you about the trip.
You can't see across a big street. You know, you can see, but it's everything's gray or tan is a good way to describe it.
I experienced the same thing
in Beijing. But the second day, they had a very rare day with all clear. It was really beautiful.
They're really worried about this summertime.
The what their strategy is to close all the factories and power plants to the west for like a month because the Olympics last a couple weeks,
sure.
And they want to do a couple weeks before. I gather one of their problems is the people to the west aren't so thrilled with that.
Being out of work.
Yeah, sure, and not having electricity and that sort of thing. And, you know, the government, it's not a democracy, and nobody's going to throw out the Communist Party, but the government depends on the people's support. No government exists without the support of its people, and they're worried. They're trying to pay the provinces to the west, I gather. And there are negotiations. Surprisingly, the provinces to the west have a pretty good negotiating point.
That,
yeah.
isn't
it's fascinating. It's, you know,
did you happen to meet the mayor of Beijing or Shanghai?
The mayor of Beijing, the one who just left, he is destined, I'm told, for very big things in the government. So they're sort of moving him up, and there's a new mayor in, and I met both of them, and then I met the mayor of Shanghai, yeah, as well.
Their troubles the same? Your troubles the same?
You know, in many senses they are. You have too much traffic. The biggest difference that I noticed was when I was there 8 or 9 years ago, everybody in Beijing got around by bicycle. Today,
Mercedes,
there are
Benz and BMWs.
plenty of bicycles, but mostly cars, or a lot more cars. And streets are they've got traffic problems. Enormous number of buildings in both cities, big, beautiful buildings, great architecture. China's fascinating. They have 1.4 billion people. They have roughly 600 million that are now have their own apartments or houses and cars. And
a whole middle class is coming.
Whole middle class. But they still have 600 million people who live on a dollar a day or less. They have brought more people out of poverty in the last 10 years than live in the United States. 300 million. But having said that, you know, America should be pleased. We don't recognize how lucky we are. Having said that, they've done – you know, they've got big problems, and they're making a big difference in their people. And, you know, it's a great market for America. I think we worry so much about them as a competitor, we should look at them as a market. And keep in mind, if they weren't there as a competitor, there'd be plenty of other people who would sell goods and services at lower prices. What we've got to do is expand our markets. We sell our exports to China are growing at 5 times our exports to the European Union, and there's, you know, 1.4 billion people that can buy things.
Every American corporation wants to be in there.
Absolutely. So, you know, some people are worried about them being competitors, and they are. And so what we've got to do is say, okay, they're not going away, so let's find ways to make our products cheaper and better and that sort of thing. And we have so many things. You know, we Americans, I think we've gotten to the point where we're not afraid of our own shadow isn't quite the right word, but right words. But we're looking at our glass being half empty, and it's 3/4 full. I mean, America's hand is so strong. And yes, it's not perfect, but, you know, we export the kinds of products and jobs that are depend on labor costs. But those that depend on intellectual quality, intellectual content and great skills and that sort of thing, those are the jobs that we have to grow here in our country. That's our expertise. And it's easy to look and say, oh, they've got everything, we've got nothing. They don't have enough engineers. They don't have enough trained workers. They don't have enough this. They don't have enough that. They've got pollution problems. You know, they've got all the problems that we have and then some, and some of the strengths. So it's I think we should view this as an opportunity. And they aren't going away. That's also for sure.
Do you think the political correct atmosphere that so pervades our world almost makes us start to self-hate? I mean, you know, we question ourselves.
You know, a coach, if the team was there, if you had a coach, he'd say, look, you know, you're getting down on yourself, men and women. Let's look at the bright side. Let's go out there and win one for the Gipper. We have the strengths. We know we can do it. And the coach would get the team looking at the other side and looking at every fact as an opportunity and as a plus rather than as a problem. And I think
we need a lot more of that in this country.
We need some leadership. We have to stop looking at what's wrong and look at what's right. We have to stop looking at their strengths and look at our strengths and what we can build on. And, John, you don't want to play anybody's hand but ours. It is such a strong hand. Having said that, there's wonderful things happening all over the world. There are wonderful people. You know, we have 450,000 people of Chinese descent in our city. And people all want recognition and respect. And I think, you know, those people were thrilled that the mayor was over there representing them. And I met an awful lot of people who live in New York who were visiting over their Chinese ancestry and others. And it's the one of the most exciting things. I took a train, they call it the Maglev train, I think,
Maglev train, which is the fastest train in the world.
It goes 400 kilometers an hour. It's 260 miles an hour.
Absolutely quiet.
It's a magnetic thing that pushes a train up an inch off the track, so it's not touching the ground. So it starts off and it goes, and there's no vibration. You can have your cup of coffee. You look at it, it's not even vibrating in the
car. And you look out the window, and the poles and the trees are going by so fast.
It's an airplane flying at ground level, and you look outside.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
And everything goes by for like 4 or 5 minutes from the airport into Central City.
Is that what you're going to be building here into the airport?
No, unfortunately or fortunately. It uses an enormous amount of energy, which is why nobody else has done it, just to pick the damn train up. Yeah. But it does show that modern technologies are coming. And we've got to be open to those. And when you build, you've got to make sure that you build so that you have the potential down the road. And we built a monorail from the airport to Jamaica,
right,
deliberately designed that it couldn't then be extended into Manhattan. Why? Because in order to get the political will together, well, everybody's going to stop in Jamaica and shop. And, you know, so the politics got in the way of what would be good traffic planning. Although if you're a merchant in Jamaica, you'd say, what do you mean? I like this.
You were happy. Let me take a break, Mr. Mayor. We'll come back. We've got the better part of 45 minutes still left. And, of course, later on in the game, we'll let you ask the questions. 1-800-848-WABC. Coming right back. Oh, here we go on the final John and Mike
final.
Show.
We just started.
Well, for the year of 2007.
Because
next week we will not be together. I'm going to be on vacation. We'll get together after the first of the year once again.
How many years have we been doing this? Did we start this?
Well, how long have you been a mayor?
Is this the finishing six? Did we start the first before I was inaugurated or afterwards?
After the first January of the first year,
Friday after the first Monday, or whatever,
somewhere in that neighborhood. So yeah, we've been doing this a long time. You must enjoy it. I know I do.
Do you think anybody listens?
Yeah, there are a few people listening. I got three on the line right now.
I can't tell you the number of people that come up to me and say, I listen all the time.
Yeah, no, we have lots of listeners. Thank goodness. We thank each and every one of you. I asked you about the...
Can you imagine if you didn't have me, how many listeners you'd have? You'd have a lot more, probably.
This, at least two or three times.
Well, you'd have me.
on the other side.
Right.
Asked you about the mayor of Beijing or Shanghai. Speaking of mayors, you were holding Mayor 101 class yesterday here.
We had 13 mayors, I think it was, and two from Connecticut, two from New Jersey, the rest from upstate, Westchester on north. There are a number from around Albany. You know, one from a city of 14,000 people and then some much bigger. It's interesting. In the end, all mayors have the same problem. Nobody likes to pay and everybody wants services. That's common no matter how big you are. You can be held accountable. That's the best part of being mayor. That's what I like about this job. You get a chance to make a difference. And you know, if you're in a 14,000 person city, you can make a difference like in a 8.2 million person city.
I thought the story of Mayor-elect John Bencivengo from Hamilton, New Jersey, was funny about his taxi cab ride.
He wanted to go to City Hall.
He wanted to go to City Hall.
And they took him to Rockefeller Center.
To Radio City.
I didn't ask him whether he got the number of the cab.
I think that's great. Oh, yeah. It's a wonderful story. Yeah, it's a true New York story. I understood your concern and criticism about the JFK plan, the Transportation Secretary Mary Peters plan on dealing with the delays. You were not happy with it, which surprised me because it's an attempt to fix a problem.
It is an attempt to fix a problem, but that's not the way. I mean, we have a problem, let's say, with some people being hungry. So let's take away food from everybody. It is true. You won't have some people being hungry. You'll have everybody being hungry. I mean, it's not a great analogy, but it's literally throwing out the baby with the bathwash because we need people being able to come to the city. That's tourism. That's all other businesses. And you don't solve the problem by keeping them from coming. You solve the problem by finding a ways for them to come. And so that's where I differ. I think, look, I like Mayor Peters. She's been very helpful with the congestion pricing funds. But I think that in this case, that's not the right solution. And I don't quite understand why, because we have this problem, particularly at JFK. LaGuardia only has two runways. And if the wind's very strong, they have to go down to one runway. And the reason is people say, why is LaGuardia big delays? Well, they've gone to one runway. Why one runway? Sorry about that. Hard to speak. It's because the planes, when the wind is from the side, the tails of modern planes aren't big enough to keep it from being pushed away. The control surfaces aren't big enough. You have to sort of land and take off into the wind. And if you use the same runway for takeoffs and landings, it can handle roughly half the capacity as if you have two runways. Normally, the winds aren't that bad. And the way LaGuardia's laid out, the two runways are perpendicular to each other. So the guy landing is always landing directly into the wind or as close to into the wind as you can have with the two runways. You have four alternatives each direction on each runway. The guy's taking off are the ones that go across the wind because they keep going faster and faster, and by the time they're ready to take off, they're accelerating, whereas the exactly reverse is true for plane landing. At Kennedy, they have parallel runways, and they have diagonal runways. So you would think that they could handle a lot more traffic.
They say they could open up a third, but the controllers are saying they don't want to do that over there.
Well, there is an allegation, I have absolutely no idea whether it's true, that all of this comes out of – if you remember back, Ronald Reagan fired all the air traffic controllers in the country and replaced them all. And I'm told they have never had great labor relations. I don't know if that's true. I've met some of the controllers, and they're great guys and women, and very smart and work very hard. And you know, listen, I'm a pilot. When I fly in this area, I can tell you these guys are the controllers, the most professional people. And New York controllers are better than any controllers I've ever flown.
I should hope
in
so,
any
with the
place
congestion.
The quieter it is, the less accommodative they are with the congestion. These men and women are so professional, but I'm told they don't have great labor relations, and that may be part of it. I don't know.
Ray Kelly announcing he wants to put radiological detectors around the city, ring of them.
Let us pray that would be a totally wasted amount of money. That would be the best thing.
$40 million.
Well, yeah. You know, it's like a life insurance policy. Mm-hmm. You never want to beat your insurance company. This is $40 million that would be wonderful if it turns out it was totally wasted. On the other hand, you don't want to run the risk. And it's money that comes from the federal government. The president had it in his budget. Congress tried to cut it. Pete King in the House and Hillary Clinton and Chuck Schumer in the Senate fought and got it restored back to what the White House had wanted to give us. That's where the money would come from. And you put detectors, you know, because a dirty bomb or a nuclear bomb emits radiation. And so you can tell from a distance away that it's something. We have some police that carry Geiger counters, but this would be much more sophisticated.
What is the ring defined as? Manhattan Island? Is it larger than that?
Number one, it's exactly the sort of question you wouldn't answer.
Oh, okay.
For security reasons. But, you know, there are strategic things outside of just the central city. There's downtown and midtown. There's the port of New York across the river in New Jersey. There are, you know, parts of other boroughs and the other adjacent counties that have – it's not – everybody should be protected. But what you're trying to do is figure out what things somebody
might
want. Prime targets, right? So it's differences. What's at risk, but what is it likely to be a target? And Ray's got some good ideas, and hopefully we can get this money and do that. So, and hopefully, as I said, it'll never detect anything. It would be wonderful.
Like all the cameras, and again, like other cities have used a ring of iron cameras watching everything. Would this be monitored by computer? Is that how it would work? And I guess that it would trigger alarms.
In this day and age, I mean, you know, if you see a security guy sitting in front of a television watching what goes on. All studies show eventually, I don't care how diligent you are, you go to sleep. So what you want to do is have the camera turn on when there's movement, and when it's not, do something else to keep so that people know when it's on, that's when they should be paying attention. And otherwise, they just tune out the whole thing. And there are a variety of different strategies to get people to do it. And some things computers can figure out. Movement, for example, is very easy. Computer knows if the pixels don't change, nothing's happening. If something, they don't have to know what's moving. And even they can even tell, however, a big thing, a small thing. I mean, computers getting pretty good at that.
Crime stats continue to go down. A couple of bad spots or worrisome spots. Brooklyn, for example.
Generally, the two. I always like this. When I first started focusing on this, and Ray and I were talking, that the numbers which the police believe are always accurate are car theft and murder. And the reason is people call their insurance company if their car is stolen, and it's very hard to get rid of a body. So all other statistics you're never really sure of. These are the two that you really can use as proxies. And every study shows that virtually all crime moves together. So if those are going down, you can assume other things are going down as well. And I'm happy to say that because of the great work of Kelly and the police department, the management, the men and women on the streets, the courts, probation, corrections, DAs, everybody and the public working together. I don't want to jinx it, but we're on the ways to setting a new record. We've got 10 days left to go in the year, but who's counting? And all the studies show in terms of murder, virtually all, not 100%, but almost all murders are either criminals shooting each other, drug dealers mostly, or family disputes, which really the police have little that they can do about that. That's
more not
social
much protection worker. That can be involved.
Right. I mean, because if somebody gets an order of protection, the courts can do something. But generally, that's not the situation. Just crimes of passion would be a ways to describe it. And short of those two things, the likelihood of you getting murdered is so small, can't be measured almost. It is very good news for the city. But having said that, every day is a challenge. And, January 1st, you start a new year and you start counting again. It's the sort of thing you can never relax on.
All right, Mr. Mayor, relax a little bit right here. Let's take a break. We'll update the news, take a fast look at Wall Street, then back to Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77 WABC. Here's George Webb. We continue with Mayor Michael Bloomberg and John Gambling here at 77 WABC. In our last few minutes, we'll take your calls. If you want to get in line, 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-WABC. What happened to the Javits Center? I mean, it looks like it's imploding, the whole planet.
I had another meeting on it this morning at 7 o'clock this morning. I gather a couple things. One, maybe all the costs originally weren't identified and put in. Maybe there's some optimism. Two, the delay certainly cost an enormous amount because
numbers
construction
I hear
costs
1-2% 3% a month. Yeah,
right. So that's probably a bigger thing than misguessing as to what the cost would be. Another thing is that because of the popularity of New York City, the hotel owners don't want to put any more money into it, and they were going to pay for part of it because they're all full. You know, a hotel room on 42nd Street at Travel Lodge or someplace like that's probably $400 a night. That's for the
I think I read the average is like $385 in the whole town.
Yeah, and that's for a big way outside of, you know. So, from the hotel's point of view, conventions can't go to a place where hotel rooms cost that much because the delegates just don't have that kind of money. So they, it's sort of a mixed bag. Down the road, we're certainly going to need a great convention center, and it'd be great to have it, but maybe they don't want to pay for it right now. The other thing that I keep coming back to, and I snapped at somebody yesterday and said, we had the opportunity to have a great convention center, a world-class convention center, paid for 100% with private dollars. it was the Jets willing to build it. All they wanted to do was to use the facility 10 Sundays a year, and the rest of the time it was the convention center expansion that we really needed, and they would have paid for the whole thing. And then you had people who were either myopic or venal and selfish, and they all stopped it. And, you know, I don't know whether we would have gotten the Olympics if we had it, but I know without it we never had a chance.
How does the no Javits plan or a significantly reduced Javits plan affect the West Side development in your view?
It probably doesn't help. It doesn't hurt it at all.
Okay.
The extension of the number 7 line's the key. People are screaming for a station at
41st and 10th.
And 10th. We have an option to build the shell of it. Nobody ever thought about building it, not for another 10 years, but to build a shell right now. The city has said we'll pay half the money if the MTA pays the other half, and in their capital budget in March or whenever, hopefully that will be in there. And if it is, and
is
it's approved.
Is this the station, per se, or just the line itself?
The station. Oh, the line goes down there. Okay. The line goes right through it. Okay. It's building the shell out and then down the
because
road.
Because there is a lot of residential already over on 42nd and the West Side.
Keep in mind, it doesn't help the economics. It helps the public in terms of transportation, but the real key is going down towards the Javits Center, and that's where – and we've got the bids coming back, and this will be the greatest development the city's seen in generations, the whole West Side. The stadium is a separate issue. It would have precluded some of the building that's going on that will be in this next plan. On the other hand, it would have, with private money, given us what we needed, and it just – I look back on it and shake my head. How could anybody be so venal and selfish or myopic and not understand we need – that's the jobs – for the entry-level people, for the working person that comes to the city and wants to work their ways up. It's in tourism and that sort of thing. And it would have been a first-class facility for everybody. And, you know, I mean, for the dumbest reasons in history other than selfishness, people didn't want it. And, you know, it's you can't look back, and I hate to look back. I just – when people are complaining about Javits, what we'll do with Javits is we'll fix it up a little bit and spend some money. People say, well, what about a big convention center out in Sunnyside Yard? Sunnyside's at least the space there. You know, it's hard to see that getting everybody together and getting the money and doing it, and you'd have to have better mass transit to it, although it's right in the middle of a railroad yard, so there's –
Yeah, and there's going to be a new Long Island Railroad
station.
Yeah,
so there's some. Right. But, you know, we just missed a great opportunity, I look back.
The state has flunked 65 schools here in New York City. Some they say we are even under their rules in evaluations. Bad enough to close down.
Well, there's a difference now. They're testing all grades rather than just 4 and 8, and there's more kids in those grades that don't have English language learners, mm-hmm. not their first language, and so that wasn't surprising. 18 schools came off the list, 65 went on. You know, in the context of 1,400 schools, it's a small number. It just says two things. One, we've come a long way, and two, we got a long ways to go.
Speaking of going, if somebody opts out of a school, how do they move to another school, and how does that school absorb them?
What do you mean?
As I understand it, if you get the state nails your school as underperforming, you have a chance to move to a different – make another choice another school.
There has to be a place in the other school, and there's all sorts of complex things. You can't just willy-nilly say, I'm going to pick the school and go anyplace.
Well,
there are schools that you have to take tests
really.
To get into. There are schools where you have to live in the area to get into. We will get a class seat for every single kid that wants to come. But there are kids who take very long commutes every day. I'll never forget talking to the parents of one of those auxiliary cops who were shot and killed. The kid had taken an hour and a half or something commute every day to go to Stuyvesant. You know, I mean, that's 3 hours a day of commuting to go to school. Family was from Russia. It was the great dream. They'd come to America, land of the free, home of the brave, great opportunity, and then their kid is killed.
Mm. Oh, just
but you know, the schools are, you know, there's never going to be enough. One of the funny things is everybody wants more schools, but of course, when you try to site them in their neighborhood,
Or pay for them. Gun law down in Congress changed slightly.
A little bit of progress. They deserve some credit. They made
Schumer and McCarthy.
Yeah, made it a little bit harder to get the verifications better. long ways to go, but they deserve some credit when they do things right.
This, right, this has to do with mental disabilities and that sort of thing, and buying guns.
Yeah, keep in mind, most of the guns on the streets in the hands of criminals are still a handful of dealers selling to, 50 guns at a clip to somebody they know is going to take them into a central city and resell them. And we had a kid the other day with two kids in, sixth grade with a gun. You know, you catch them all the time. It's
it's crazy. Yeah. I haven't seen you since the steroids in Major League Baseball, the report was released. Your reaction to that story?
Well, I mean, when you see me in a bathing suit, do I look like I take steroids?
You're bulked up.
Stop laughing.
Exactly.
It's very sad. You think of baseball and professional sports, you want to think it's all fair and everybody competes. Sadly, people break the rules. It comes about maybe from the pressure to perform and make more money, or the competition, or just maybe some misguided understanding of what's important in life. Cal Rifkin didn't take steroids. Johnny Unitas didn't, who was my hero, didn't take steroids. Cousy and Russell, and I was a big Celtics fan in Boston. Those guys didn't take steroids. They worked and worked and worked, and it was great mano-mano. And that's a shame what's happening here. Incidentally, some of these people who are alleged to have taken them may not have, so you don't want to condemn them. But clearly some people have been doing it. And we should do better drug testing. And I think it's up to Major League Baseball. It's in their interest. The owners, I think they do understand, incidentally, they've got to stop this. And the union's got to stop it, because you're going to destroy the owners' values and the players' ability to make money, as well as the fans' enjoyment. Everybody's got a vested interest.
MTA fares, obviously, headlines here. Talk with State Senator.
Oh, I had a great picture with the governor on one of the papers yesterday.
Yes, unmasked.
That's a framer.
Bandits.
That's a framer. Make no mistake about
that
one. You
got that one in the office,
absolutely.
Huh? I talked with State Senator Carl Marcellino yesterday from Long Island, and one of the issues that he has, he's got a couple, but one of them is the numbers, the deficit numbers, income, revenues keep changing for the MTA. It's this one day, it's that another day. Is that a concern?
Well, welcome to the NFL. This is running a big, I'm not here to defend the transit system. I've said 1,000 times, I'll say it again. Compared to 66 when I came here, the subway I take is a lot better. But, there's an enormous number of moving parts. They are dependent on fare revenues. They're dependent on state and city legislators. They're dependent on tax revenues, which are changing all the time. And anybody that thinks they can predict the tomorrow, whether it's who's going to win in baseball, football, the stock market, or anything else,
President of the United States,
you can't do it. Just talking about that, you can't do any of that. So there's and your expenses are always varying, and there are always things happening that you didn't count on, and things that break. What you do know is they don't have a lot of extra money. You do know that down the road they're going to have big problems, because just built-in costs that are escalating. And the time to start planning for that is not let's wait until we're in a bad situation. It's let's have a small increase now. And, for example, on a monthly pass, I think it went from like 76 to 81 or 75
$5,
to 80,
yeah,
$5,
right.
76
right.
to 81. Okay, I don't know how many times people that have monthly passes take it, but let's assume they take it 5 days a week, that's 20 work days, double that because they come and go, is 40. 40 rides, $5. Do the math. It's not a lot of money per ride for what's a pretty good service. So nobody likes to pay it, but the yelling and screaming, I don't mean to make light of the money, but per capita, it's not, and per trip, it's not that much money, given what it costs to go to a movie today, what it costs. You can go to Starbucks and spend $8 on a cup of coffee. I like the guy in the corner for, a buck you can get a donut and a cup of coffee. It's both pretty good.
All right. We're running out of time here because I want to get to the phones. But why do you think we should not reduce the sales tax? In New York,
we have been leading in reducing sales tax. We cut our sales tax on clothing and shoes for under $110. Then we cut the sales tax totally on all clothing and shoes. But this 1% that is scheduled to phase out unless the legislature does something,
summertime,
cost us $1.2 billion worth of revenues. And I'm going to break this to you, but our cops and firefighters and police and teachers and everybody else want to get paid. And $1.2 billion, we're going to have a few billion-dollar deficit next year unless we do something anyways. Our Wall Street profits are down. That's going to cost us hundreds of millions of dollars. We don't know how much yet because you're not sure what's going to happen, but could easily be another $500 million right there. To lose $1.2 billion on top of that would be a very big problem. We're cutting a couple, 2.5%. We've asked for 5% cuts for next year. We'll get a big chunk of those, but we just need the money. If you want services, somebody's got to pay for it. I know nobody likes to talk about that, but can you explain to me which workers you don't want us to pay?
I'll give you a list.
Please give me the list. I'll be happy to tell them, John Gamley. Give me a home phone number.
Yeah, thanks a lot. That's my friend Mike Bloomberg. Mr. Mayor, hang on. We'll get to the phones here in just a moment. Let's take our final break. 1-800-848-WABC. Coming right back to you.
WABC.
All right, a couple of more minutes here. Yes, in the sleigh with Mayor Michael Bloomberg on this Friday before Christmas.
In the sleigh?
Well, we've got the sleigh ride. You don't have your headphones on. It's got sleigh ride music behind us.
Okay. That's appropriate this time of the year.
Absolutely so.
But did you notice both the snowstorms last week? Sanitation department had those streets cleaned perfectly all the time.
Certainly doesn't help with those of us that like sleighs.
Not only that, they did it without running any plows to tear up the streets and without spending a lot of money.
Just throwing chemicals on it?
I was in China. First Deputy Mayor Patty Harris was acting mayor, did a great job with the sanitation department.
Right. Well, that proves one thing. If it snows again, get Patty on the
case. Get me in a warm place or something like that. Sure, that's a great deal for everybody.
To the phones, Mr. Mayor, where do you want to start? Number four,
sure.
Bill, you've got the mayor's ear. Go.
Hey, good morning, John, Mr. Mayor. An honor to speak with you.
And you.
I just wanted to thank you for your unwavering common sense approach to running government. I think that you should be the model for all of our so-called elected leaders. It's just plain pure common sense. And I live on Long Island, and your methods can be felt out here. It's just plain and simple. If you don't have the money, you can't do it. And I just love it. I think you're great. I think you could be a powerful influence.
What are you looking for? What are you looking for? Working with the mayor?
Bill
here?
Is not a relative of mine. I've never met him. I don't think.
I have a successful small business. I'm very happy where I am, but I'm glad, Mr. Mayor, I'm glad you are where you are. I hope you go up higher.
Well, thank you very much. This is a nice ways to
start
the calls.
Exactly.
Let's see what happens next.
Let's see if it goes down. Bill, thanks for the good phone call and the nice words here. We're going to go to Al in Queens. You've got the mayor. Go, Al.
Hi, Al.
Hello, Mr. Mayor.
Hi.
I understand you want to put a payment fence around the city of Manhattan. Don't you think all the outer borough people, and I'm one of them, should boycott all business in Manhattan? Boycott Madison Square Garden, boycott every theater, and we'll teach the politicians a lesson that you cannot discriminate against the outer boroughs.
Nobody's discriminating against the outer boroughs. We're trying to, keep in mind, Al, that an awful lot of people that come into the city from the outer boroughs pay tolls going over bridges right now, and that would offset any charge. So for those people, it wouldn't cost them anything. What we're trying to do is to find money to improve mass transit so people in the outer boroughs, as you call them, can get into Manhattan and out of Manhattan a lot easier, and when they're in Manhattan, get around. And it's the people in the outer boroughs who are really the big beneficiaries of this. People in Manhattan already, it's true they don't have to pay, but they're the ones that already have good mass transit. The trouble we have is we have a regional mass transit system that isn't really regional. There's an awful lot of parts of Queens and Brooklyn and Staten Island and the Bronx that don't have service. And going out into Nassau and up into Westchester and Rockland and Suffolk, we just have never, for many, many years, decades, we've stopped investing in mass transit. So we've got to get the money from someplace, and this would be a ways to do it. We have two objectives, Al. It's one, to give you good mass transit so you can get into the city, and two, if you do want to drive, being able to get around. And when you're in the city, being able to go from one store to another or one business to another. So it really is a win-win for everybody. And right now, unfortunately, there's just so many cars. Everything really is stopped. That hurts the economy and doesn't create jobs. And number two, I don't know where you live specifically in Queens, but there's lots of parts of Queens where you just don't have the kind of service that the MTA was created for and that you have a right to have.
And it should be improving, and that's why we have to do all of these things. Thank you very much, Al. Let's go to Mitch in Queens. Mitch, what's your question?
Good morning. I'd like to know if the auto salvage yards near Shea Stadium are going to be demolished.
We're trying to find places for them to move. There has to be, you know, but that's a business, and they're a business. We have needs for that business, those businesses, like every other one. But all of that's near Willits Point, and that's going to be developed into a phenomenal business community, stores, commercial, residential, hotels. It's going to be a great opportunity for the city. If you take a look at a map, it's got great mass transit. It's right in the middle of things, right near the new Shea Stadium, and the opportunities for the city are great.
Have you been past the new Shea Stadium? I'm amazed how far along they are.
Both that and Yankee Stadium. Keep in mind, stadiums, the steel and the cement goes up very easily, and with any building, that goes up quickly, and then the internal part takes a lot longer. And with the stadiums, the internal part isn't, there isn't a lot of internal part.
I was going to say, there's not much there.
Right. Well, that's overstating it, but yeah, compared to an office building or a store, you know, there's...
Got to go. I understand you're going to hold a party on New Year's Eve in Times Square.
Drop the ball. Who knows how many millions, hundreds of millions of people will be there. It'll be a great time. It's one of the most exciting things. If anybody, you get a chance, it's safe, no booze, dress warmly, you're going to have a great time.
Happy New Year.
Same to you. Happy New Year to everybody. Merry Christmas, terrific Kwanzaa, happy Hanukkah, all that sort of stuff.
We'll see you next year.
Looking forward
to it. This is the home of Sliwa.